This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 15. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe. This week, I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Berners, it's a triumphant return.
Triumphant return. I've been lost, but I've been found. I'm back with a vengeance. I'm ready to rock, coach.
Excellent. And Garraz, you're here as well. How's it going?
I'm very well, thank you. A bit windy. Just been for a run with a dog and got blown around all over the place, unfortunately. But back inside now, back inside the house and feeling a bit warmer.
Lovely.
Who won? You or the dog?
Well, I mean, that goes without saying, mate. She's got marginally shorter legs than I have, but she's got four of them. So an easy win for Rosie this morning.
I'm always chasing as well. Of a different...
Oh, marvellous. Welcome back, Berners. So you're not back in school yet then, Garraz? There's no...
No, we've got another week. I was in yesterday, just doing a bits and bobs, and I'll go back in tomorrow just to get ahead. We've got practice on Saturday, and then we're playing Somerset under-17s on Sunday, which will be good, weather permitting.
And how did the tour go? Did they manage to keep themselves relatively warm?
Yeah, we did. It was good, actually. We had two games. We played Worcester Academy and lost off the second last ball, which was a cracking game of cricket in horrible conditions. And both sides did brilliantly to stick at it and keep the quality high, which was really good. And that's why we play against sides like Worcester Academy to stretch us. And, you know, the guys did really well to take it down to the wire, to be honest. And in the end, we probably should have won it, which was a shame in the end. But, good experience. And then we had another game the next day against Worksop College, who were a good team, actually. And we were minus a few players through injury and various other things. And we lost off the last ball. So two absolute belting games of cricket, which have given us a lot to work on, which is great.
We've also seen the IPL in full swing. There's been some cracking games already and some real shocks.
It's been good to watch, isn't it, some of it? And, to see my prediction of the Chennai Super Kings having a stinker to start off with, so that's going well.
Yeah, there's been some what you would think would be upsets already. So it shows the IPL is a bit of a leveller when it comes to that kind of thing. Have you been watching much of it, Berners?
I think Chris Gayle should start his own team, because basically he is taking on the whole of the IPL on his own. So why not start your own team, Gailey?
Yeah, why not? There's a stat about Chris Gayle, which I put on Twitter the other day. Let me just find it again, because it's amazing. One in every nine deliveries that Gayle has faced in 2020 cricket has been hit for six.
That's a great stat. I love it. I love it.
That's quite...
Absolute quality.
And he's getting close to one in eight, apparently, as well.
Brilliant.
He's actually getting that average down, which is amazing. Brilliant. I mean, he does biff it, doesn't he? I mean, there's no two ways about it. He's a powerhouse, and he can clear those short ropes in the IPL, no problems.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. That's one of the best stats I've heard for a while.
That's praise indeed from a stat man like yourself, Garraz. Another player I wanted to talk about, another West Indian I wanted to talk about, was Sunil Narine, who was the subject of an article this week on Crick Info, and it was Akash Chopra, in fact, who was saying it was under the guise of being a story about how he has maintained himself as a mystery spinner, even though there's so much analysis these days. But the conclusion was that he's not that much of a mystery. It's just that he's extremely tactically aware, and he knows when to use his variations and how to use them and who to use them against.
Yeah, do you know what? I can't answer that because I don't know the bloke. If he has got that at such a young age, then, you know, that's a fantastic ability to have developed, and well done to him. What I think makes him difficult is the fact that he bowls with a scrambled seam, and that was in essence the difference between Muralitharan and Harbhajan in terms of their effectiveness. Wasn't so much about the areas that they hit or they didn't hit, But there was long periods of time where Murali would bowl his doozra and his off spinner with scrambled seams. So you didn't have that ability to see a seam upright to pick one ball or another. Whereas with Harbhajan, his off spinner would be a conventional off spinner, certainly for the first half of his career. Mm. And then his doozra would be scrambled. So you'd pick up the difference between just one being set in a conventional way and the other one being completely scrambled. That was the way you picked it. So this guy keeps everything scrambled, and it does keep people guessing, which is a part of the art. I also think that 2020 cricket, because batters have to go at you, if there is deception and batters have to go at you, you've got a great chance of getting wickets. And that's exactly what he's done. And I think, you know, the predictions when it first came round that it was going to be the death of spinners have been proved completely wrong, whether you spin it like him with scrambled seam or whether you just bowl conventional spin. You know, the fact that somebody's got to come at you because of the format of a game lends itself to spinners.
Yeah, exactly. But spinners are wicket takers. They can stop runs being scored, and they're absolutely crucial. But you don't have to be. I guess the lesson is that you don't have to have, even though he's very difficult to pick because there's not very much difference between the ball coming out as an off break and the ball coming out as a doosra, it's still his tact. If you can pick up that tactical awareness and understand how to bowl to people, then you can be a spinner. Even if you're very orthodox, you can be a spinner in that level of cricket and be confident that you can do an extremely important job.
Well, I think that's what Swanee's proven, isn't he? You know, in what people would have considered the latter half of his career, because he spent a lot of time learning how to bowl properly and learning this tactical awareness. And then he came into the international game ready and was able to adapt and shift and to pick up on the batter's game and to try and stifle the batter and to bowl different balls. And that's the usual way that a spinner would go about it, to learn that over the course of a career. What Akash is saying here is that this lad's picked it up very early, and that makes him very exciting to watch, doesn't it? As a young bowler that's picked up that skill, but somebody like Swanee had to wait till he was sort of 27, 28 to really have mastered that. So, you know, that's fantastic. And to me, that's where 2020 has been good, because a bowler like him has had to learn that quicker than they would have done in normal cricket that was 10, 15 years ago.
Berners, how long did it take you to learn the art of tweaking?
Throwing lollipop bombs.
Yeah.
A couple of hours one morning. I've adopted the Darren Lehman round arm, which I don't know, call it lazy, but it's effective. I can get through an over in about 35 seconds if it's a maiden. You know, keeper just throws the ball straight back. I'm in off of two or three paces. I'll tell you an interesting one, Gareth, with myself. I don't know if this is with all spinners, but when I watch spinners, they seem very, what's the word I'm looking for, repetitive in everything they do in terms of like their run-up and the way they flick the ball and all the rest of it. Whereas I think I change my run-up every time I bowl. For me, it's all the final descent into the delivery crease, which is the important thing. And I kind of reshuffle and jiggle no matter how many paces I've come off of. What do you think on that one?
Yeah, I think that's each one to their own. There was certainly a very, very much a school of thought within sports psychology, which would suggest that the more consistent you are in your preparation, and that's what you've talked about there, you know, the number of steps, the twiddling of the ball, the consistency, the more consistency you'll be in performance. And I think that stands up in the main. But as you say, in talking about yourself there, Berners, and your own experiences, there are people that can adapt very quickly and actually are better when they're adapting than if they're being very deliberate about doing the same thing over and over again. And this comes back to that individuality that we talk about a lot on this show. But yeah, sports psychologists would say, you know, the more consistent you can be in your preparation before each ball, the more consistent you will be in execution. Whereas we are beginning to find out now that there are certain types, of which you are one, who actually are best when they're adapting, you know. And I think that makes it a much nicer balance when you're coaching people, because it isn't the one hat fits all approach.
I could also give some reasoning behind it as to why I do it. It's not just because I'm lazy. It's because for me, having to think about doing something like that, you know, going back to my mark, getting my fingers in a certain position on the ball, where I'm going to run past the umpire, for me, that doesn't really work with my mindset and how I roll. I just like to get up there and just wang it down and not think about it too much. And I find that my end product's a lot more successful when I've got a kind of neutral mind, as I call it. And that's not just in cricket, but in all walks of life.
That's a really interesting point, Berners, and we won't slave it too much. But, I mean, you look at somebody like Alan Donald, who's been mentioned in this show. You remember him standing at his end of his mark, being very deliberate about the way he put the ball in his hand and deliberate about his preparation. And you contrast that to somebody like a Mornay Morkel, who does his little circle at the end of a run and just runs it in bowls. And each of those two approaches work for the individual. But, you know, you can't say that one is better than the other because they both work. And that's exactly what you've talked about there.
There's a phrase in martial arts called mind like water. I've probably mentioned it before, where you are responding in the exact way. Because if you throw a pebble into a pond, it ripples. It doesn't brace or impact, or the pond doesn't brace or impact or anything like that. It will always ripple in the right amount of ripple. And that's where the mind like water concept comes from, and how you feed into that. That might be through discipline and working out how to do the same thing every time, or maybe it's through not thinking about it too much and not being over disciplined. But whatever works for you is that's kind of the bottom line, isn't it? I mean, I guess that's the problem with a lot of things in cricket, in coaching, in playing cricket, is that the answer is always it depends.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, you know, as we talked about previously, it's listen to your body rather than everybody. And just because there's a really good theory or really good concept that's been proven through this research or that research doesn't necessarily mean that that fits for you. And you've only got to look at a game of cricket between two great sides to see there are different approaches to it. Yet both sides are great. And, you know, Graham Smith's batting's a classic, isn't it? You know, he's done quite well in his life with a technique that most people would screw their face up if they saw an 8-year-old walk in that way. So I, you know, listen to your body rather than everybody. I think it's a great bit of advice.
Great, yeah. Right, let's wrap up this section. We've been rambling on, so let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions read out by Berners. And Gareth and I can only answer yes or no, even though we may want to say a lot more. So, Berners, over to you for the yes-no round.
First question, stop overstepping in practice sessions.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, 50-over cricket is better as two T20 innings per side.
No.
No.
Third question, confidence is contagious.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to get a couple of questions out of the mailbag this week. I had a little bit of disaster when it came to the questions. I keep all the questions in a little folder on my computer, and somehow or another I managed to delete them all. So I had to go back through my emails and find the questions again. So if you've sent in a question recently and you're wondering why it hasn't been answered, it's because I obviously can't operate a computer. But I do have two questions that I've found, and I have passed them over to Berners, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you have two questions there. What's the first one?
I do. Our first question comes in from Shane, and it's very much pace related. He's saying that he's struggling to brace his front leg and get it straight upon impact. It always bends out slightly, and it's a bit of a habit. And of course, that breaks his chain of energy, and he's losing a wee bit of pace. So he just wants to know what he can do to enhance that.
Now, this is kind of the what's been popularised in recent times by Ian Pogge, this idea of the front foot block, where you brace your front leg like a pole vaulter would if you're a fast bowler to let the ground energy move up through your body and eventually into the ball. But I'm interested, Gareth, in your thoughts about this in general. If you have a bowler who isn't bowling with a braced front leg, is that one of the first things that you would look at, or where would you step in with something like that?
Is the braced front leg something that I look at? Is one of the indicators of fast bowling or potential for fast bowling? So it is something I would look at. I mean, going back to this question here directly. If you're struggling to brace your front leg, then generally there's two things that can really impact upon that. One being how your front foot lands. And this goes back to the tram article that I wrote recently that you can pick up on the site. So Tram being time, range, area, and mass. So if you can imagine, that Shane is landing with his front half of his foot first, a toe first, and that obviously increases the spike of the ground forces, which means that the front leg is most likely to brace under the impact of those ground forces. Whereas a heel to toe striker, somebody who makes contact with the heel first and then rolls across a bigger range, increasing the time, increasing the area, and increasing the mass, will withstand the ground forces better, and as a result, will bowl generally with a straighter leg, maybe even a fully braced leg like an Alan Donald. So that's the first thing I'd look for with somebody who is breaking the chain of energy, as Shane refers to it here, is how that front foot lands, because it's very, very difficult, nigh on impossible, to withstand 6 to 8 or maybe even 10 times the body weight, depending on the downforce going through the body if you've got a toe contactor rather than a heel-to-toe contactor. So that'd be the first thing. Second thing is length of delivery stride, because the length of a delivery stride has a positive impact upon using the ground forces effectively. So somebody with a short delivery stride is more likely to brace their front leg than somebody with a long delivery stride. And again, we've mentioned him twice now, but Alan Donald was a classic example of somebody who bowled over a braced front leg as a result of being a heel-to-toe lander, but also having a long delivery stride.
One of the common things that people say when we talk about a braced front leg, well, isn't that potentially causing problems with the knees? Have you seen that? Have you seen players with a braced front leg having increased knee problems with that front knee?
No, I've seen the complete opposite. I've seen bowlers with bent front legs having to take more of the ground forces through their knee because of the ineffectual land of the front foot. So the whole idea of having a braced front leg is that you've actually dissipated many of the ground forces, which allows you to bowl over a braced front leg. Therefore, there are less forces going up, or they're being transferred more effectively up the body rather than stopping and starting. So if you have a look at someone, trying to think, who bowls with a bent front knee, if you have a look at bowlers that bowl with a bent front knee and you did a knee pain incidence thing associated with that, you'd see people that bend their front knee having more knee pain than people that brace their front leg.
So it's not only a pace thing, it's also an injury prevention tool as well. So it's definitely a beneficial technical point that you want to change.
Mm. It's not easy to change, though. That is, I mean, the whole way our feet land is blooming difficult to change, and it takes heck of a lot of time. And you'd need video from the side. You'd need somebody to keep monitoring you, really. So, Shane, it's, you know, whilst your question is, can you get more pace by doing it? The answer is yes. The journey to get to that is actually quite long and probably going to take a lot of patience. So it's not absolutely essential that you do it. But, you know, if you're beyond lend all his pace, then it might be worth exploring.
I've worked with Ian Pont a few times on this area because that's one of his big points, is this braced front leg. And he does some drills where he simply takes it back to the point where the front foot is landed, and he has that braced front leg, and then works it through, you know, in the classic way that you go back to the point where the problem is, and then you work at that point, and then try and work it into your action over a period of time.
Yeah, but it takes a lot, doesn't it, David? You know, you have to be very committed to go through that, because it will be clunky and awkward, as with most things that require change, and it starts off being really inefficient, and you have to stick with it.
Yeah, and the younger you can do it, the better, of course. You know, if you're talking about a 10-year-old who you can jump in with, that's going to make it a lot easier to make any changes than someone who's 25.
I saw a lad the other day, actually, when we were out in Sardinia, who ran up and bowled, and in terms of the indicators of potential pace, he was absolutely armed with them. And it also happened that his dad was pretty rapid as well, but he really, really excited me. And the thing that really stood out was his ability to bowl over a braced front leg, but also his ability to have a long delivery stride and have that heel to toe contact. And that is absolutely advantageous for a fast bowler. But as I say, if you haven't got that, you've got to be really patient. You've got to work hard, Shane, and to pick that up. And if you do it, then good on you, mate, because you'll pick up pace, and also you'll show that you can adapt to any change that needs to be made, which is a great effort.
Next question is from 12-year-old Emilio, and he's got some trials coming up, and he just wants to know what sort of things he needs to be ready for at an under-12 trial. He wants to get in.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but this is of particular interest to me, as next week I'm holding an under-11 trial. Gareth, I put this question in particularly to pick your brains, and I'll be blatant about saying that.
Well, I was going to ask whether Emilio was one of your players, actually. Can you give me the answer of what you're looking for next week?
Yeah.
I mean, the question on this really is I don't know, bottom line, because, you know, every team looks for slightly different things. And I know what I'd be looking for at the age of 12. I'd be looking for some game awareness. I'd be very much so. I'd want to have a proper game, but I'd also want to load that game to see whether people could think outside of the usual performance that you get at trials, which is where batters do everything to not get out. You know, and they'll leave more balls than they would do in any normal game situation, and they block more balls than they normally would do in any game situation. I'd probably look to load it as a coach to make sure that people actually played as they do, because the difficulty with every selection or trial or whatever is that players come along and they've done what they've done, which has got them to that trial, and then they change everything because they try and do what they think the coach wants to see. And I can remember doing that. I remember having my under-15 West of England trial where, you know, I was a filthy slogger, to be brutally honest with you, and I went into it and blocked the backside out of it. Now, fortunately, that was what they probably wanted to see, but I wouldn't say that it was a great trial as a consequence. I got in, but you know, I changed my game as a result and actually ended up batting number 11 where I could have batted number 6 in the team. Because I had blocked the pants out of it when I played. So I think just go in there and play. The reason why you're at the trial in the first place is that you're batting or you're bowling or you're fielding or a combination of those three things have put your head above everybody else and you've been asked to come to a trial. The worst thing that you can do is to try and adapt your game on one day to try and meet what everybody else wants to see. Because you're going to end up not doing yourself the best of justice. So, you know, if you do go out there and if you have got into the trial because you smacked it, then you continue to smack it. If you've got into the trial because you can set people up by bowling an away swinger and then going wide of a crease and angling one in, you do that. So just be true to yourself would be the key thing to me. And as a coach, I would always look to set up game situations that would put people in positions where they had to play, as opposed to I'm going to get in because I don't play and I leave a lot and all of that, which I've seen a million times, you know, at trials. I want to see thinking cricketers, even at the age of 12. I think game awareness in cricketers is pretty good. I want to see people play as they play. So that would be my view, Emilio. Just go out there and play in the way that's got you to that point of getting a trial in the first place.
So how much would you adapt the game to fit in with what you are looking to do as the coach? Would you just let the game play out?
No, I wouldn't. I would go with scenarios. And the reason being is that if you let the game played out, you're leaving it so open to, you know, somebody getting bowled out for 50 and then you have to generate something anyway. Or somebody batting 25 overs for 10, which isn't exactly what you're looking for as well. And then it restricts the opportunity for the people underneath. So I'd probably go with 7 over scenarios with 3 people batted. The bowling side's objective is to get 2 wickets and then that's the end of scenario. And the batting side's objective is to, you know, either with the first one to set a target for everybody else to chase in their 7 overs, or you set something up by saying we want you to get 41 or whatever the case may be. Set it up in a specific way that you're testing people. So your opening batters get to bat in a scenario which would be the first 6 overs of a 2020 game, for example, or a first 10 overs of a 50 over game. You've got 3 or 2 wickets to play with. The ideal is in the 50 over game to get, I don't know, 55 for 1 at the end of the scenario. If the bowling side get two wickets, that's the end of the scenario. We go to the next one. The good thing about that is you often find that people get more opportunity to bat than if they'd have been playing in a game situation where your top four or five might get the opportunity to bat, and then the rest are left twiddling their thumbs and then go out and slog it, and then don't necessarily give you as the coach the best view of them as a cricketer. So scenarios are something that I'm a massive fan of in trials, because I think you get a better picture of every cricketer that comes through the door.
How easy is it, well, to lean towards players who maybe you find personally easier to coach, because your personality wise you kind of match up, you get the type of kid who you can relate to a bit more, and you feel like, well, this kid is listening to me, for want of a better phrase. And then the one who maybe is not listening quite so intently or not quite so clued into your coaching style just yet, can be left aside because there isn't that great of a matchup. How much do you have to watch out for that kind of a problem?
Well, I think it's inevitable that coaches at the beginning of their career will lean towards the people that appear to be listening, and I know that I did that in years gone by, and whereas now I would be asking myself, right, why isn't that person listening now? Our easy assumption would be, oh, he just doesn't care enough, or this, that, and the other. But probably the reason is that he's not understanding quite what you're saying, and that means that you've got to say it in a slightly different way to get it across to him. So I would say that I look more for people to ask questions now or to screw their face up at what I'm saying, because they need more clarity, than the people he just goes yes, 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 and actually isn't hearing you. They might be listening to you, but they're not hearing you. But that's experience. That's all that is. But I know that, and you're going into this relatively new as a coach next week, aren't you?
Trial wise, exactly. Yeah. And
it is easy to slip into, oh, he's a good lad because he listened to what I said and he regurgitated my words and all of that sort of stuff. But actually, you know, my experience tells me now that there's a little bit more to the person that isn't appearing to take in everything as much as you may want them to. And that's often down to our performance rather than their performance. So I'd say in years gone by, I was influenced hugely. Now I don't get influenced by that yes, yes, yes guy quite so much, because I understand a bit more about how people operate.
Yeah, well, that's interesting as well, because from the player point of view, from an under 12 player point of view, you can't, I guess there's not, you're going to be, your reaction's mostly going to be honest, isn't it? There's not going to be a lot of, oh, let's do what the coach wants me to do, so I'll pretend to listen. Or does that happen?
I think it does happen. I'm sure that a lot of parents would be telling them, right, make sure you do this and do that and all of that. But, you know, the bottom line is that, I mean, I remember Alistair Cook, when I first came into contact with him at 15, Cookie asked me questions that I wasn't expecting a 15-year-old to ask me. And it put me on the back foot big time. Because he wanted more precision than I was giving him, because at the time I was a young coach and everything was flowery and lovely and, you know, everybody give it a good old go and that's good enough and all of that. But actually that wasn't good enough for Cookie. Cookie wanted, but what are you actually asking me to do? What are you looking for here? And that put me on the back foot, but actually it just showed that he was him. And he still asks those questions now because, you know, and we accept that that's part of his character. But at the time, I found that really, really difficult. But you do find guys that will just say, do their P's and Q's because their parents have told them, right, that's the way to get in. And I think it's our job as coaches and as trial managers and whatever to look beyond that. Because talent identification is about, you know, identifying things about people that you know, will stand them in good stead, not just about them, people agreeing to everything that you say. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested in your experience, mate, in terms of that. And it would be lovely if I'd like a quirky one to get into your team and see how that tested you.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll start. Maybe I'll find a quirky one deliberately now.
Yeah, well, at least give them the time of day. I mean, you know, give them a fair crack. That's all I ask.
Yeah, well, yeah, and we're not averse to having big squads at that level. So there's probably room for a couple of players who aren't quite fitting the mould. So,
but going back to Emilio, yeah. Go and be yourself.
Yes, I was going to summarise that that quite long discussion by saying exactly the same thing. If you can be yourself. And you can show off what you've done to get into that trial, then the rest is down to the coach, which you don't have a huge amount of control over. So, you know, if you walk away and you thought, well, I did everything the way that I do things, you can't do more than that, can you? You can't. So again, this is number two. Good luck. Well, last week, Gareth did back-to-back soapboxes, but Berners is back in the fray and he's got something to talk about. So 60 seconds, Berners, over to you.
Basic discipline, but executed poorly, I believe, at various levels of the game. At the top end, it's starting to improve somewhat, but throwing generally, that's throwing, a very simple thing to do, you would think, but the actual concept and productivity of one's throwing on a Saturday afternoon, certainly in some of the playing fields I play, is absolutely abysmal. So I think it should be something that people take seriously. They practice, they also have a technique which they apply and are adaptive to changing. A lot of people just throw the same way from day one, you know. Why not try something different, get your body in a different position, take on a few different coaching tips and start to throw properly and get the ball above the stumps and hopefully keep the runs down and create a few more run out opportunities. You also put a lot of pressure on the opposition. So make sure you practice, set some time aside at training and get throwing properly, guys.
And so that's the end of Berners Triumphant Return Show, where we just got a couple of things we need to sort out before we leave. The first of which is the winner of the prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. It's for one of our questions. Shane's was about bracing his front leg, and Amilo's was about under 12 trials. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
As the dog squeaks a toy, I'm going to go with... Emilio's trial question. I thought it was good and it was topical, bearing in mind of what you've got coming up in the next week. So this week, Emilio, off you go, mate. We've won a course.
Well, congratulations, and that's only going to help you. And as we hear the sound of a squeaking dog toy in the background, we can ask Berners. How do you get in touch with the show if someone wants their question answered?
I thought you were going to ask me how I make a dog squeaker. give us a call at 02088167691 or drop us an email, coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. You can also get us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and you can find us on Twitter, which is at PV Cricket Coach. You can ask questions in any of those multi and varied ways. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't use iTunes, but you still want to subscribe, if you go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, you'll get all the instructions for how to subscribe to the show in any other device that you like. So that's the end of the show this week. So until next time, cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Coach, and the dog says squeak back to you.
Yeah, cheers to all the canines listening as well.
Exactly.
Squeak, squeak. Bye, guys.
Cheers.